Your summer job recess means you can go to Rehoboth Beach or maybe to a villa in Gibraltar. But for members of Congress, being away from the grim domed Capitol building doesn't mean they're not working. In fact, they have work weeks averaging 59 hours. What are they doing? For some answers, we turn to David Hawkins, senior editor at Roll Call. And David, you have looked into this and found out that, golly, it's maybe quiet in the middle of Washington, D.C., but that doesn't mean Congress is really not doing anything.
That's right. So the 59-hour number that you mentioned is a real number, or at least it's a number created by, calculated by some serious people, the Society for Human Resources Management and the Congressional Management Foundation. They did this study a couple of years ago, and they did it by anonymous interviews with members, so they had every reason to be honest, and by actually getting permission to look at a bunch of congressional schedules, the actual schedules that the members and their staff keep. And what they found was when they're in Washington, their work week normally is about 70 hours a week, but when they're at home in their districts, it's only 11 hours less, or as you say, 59 hours a week, some averaged over time. Now, what they found was that, yes, during these recesses, they do spend about 17% of their time on family and personal business, so that works out to about, you know, 2 out of every 5 days a week, so that seems kind of reasonable. And then what are they doing the rest of the time? They're spending about a third of their time visiting with their constituents, office hours, town meetings, whatnot. They work on policy. They think about legislation. They do a lot of press. And, of course, they do a lot of campaigning. So that's not actually, none of that is actually a vacation. It's not all, you know, what the taxpayers pay them to do, but plenty of it is.
A lot of those 59 or 70 hours, depending on the season, you mentioned they go to events and community events. I guess maybe in some sense it's always campaigning, but in other sense it is constituent work. And if they have to sit through a lot of rubber chicken dinners, a lot of this happens at evenings too, doesn't it?
That's true. And, you know, and you make a very excellent point that except for when they're dialing for dollars and raising money, virtually all of their public events are sort of a hybrid of, you know, even if they're official events, the member, by being present in the community, is putting him or herself out there, and in essence, it's a political thing. Yes, a lot of this, you know, they go to a lot of Rotary Club lunches, but they also go to a lot of breakfasts and, as you say, rubber chicken dinners. And they are, you know, they're on view back in their districts. In some sense, they are doing what the founders intended, being back home closer to the people. That is, and sometimes harder work than just being in some cloakroom at the Capitol somewhere where their constituents can't actually see them.
And if they're local districts are as hot as it has been here, then they have to worry about whether the potato salad is spoiled, too.
That's true. And you did mention villa in Gibraltar, and it is also true, we should stop to say, that some of them do travel during these long recesses, and we're now in week 5 of a 7-week congressional break, the longest mid-year congressional break in more than 30 years, long summer break, and some of them are traveling for work. There are congressional delegations that are official delegations that go to, you know, not Gibraltar, but Afghanistan or Iraq or Guantanamo Bay or some nicer places. There are study trips or delegations to understand our posture in NATO that went to Italy. Nancy Pelosi was the leader of that. So some of them do travel. The ones that are in tight reelection races or are especially freshmen are essentially told, traveling in the summer is after you've won your first couple of elections, then you can travel in the summer.
We're speaking with David Hawking, senior editor at CQ Roll Call. And in your video column this week at rollcall.com, you mentioned that how unpopular Congress is as an institution, which seems to be always the case. And yet nobody really personally dislikes their own member of Congress. They're glad to have them to the rubber chicken circuit or the Rotary Club or whatever it might be, the Grange Hall and maybe the rural areas. So how is it that people that are personally popular, because most of them do get reelected, it all adds up to such a negative?
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? It is that's one of the oldest adages in studying Congress. As members, is the public hates Congress but loves their congressman. And yes, this year, we at CQ Roll Call are predicting a reelection rate well into the 90s. There are less than 10% of the congressional districts in the country are remotely vulnerable to a party turnover. So how does this happen? Well, for one thing, the vast majority of the congressional districts have been drawn by the political map makers to make it almost guaranteed that one party or the other will hold the seat. In other words, there are more than 200 reliably Republican districts and more than 200 or about 190 or 180 reliably Democratic districts, and only the that small difference is where one guy could be thrown out. And only three people so far this year have been denied renomination, have lost primaries. So they continue to love their congressman.
Yeah, strange one. I guess maybe we'll never figure it out. But I also wanted to ask you in another vein that Congress is doing something. And there's a story also about what they're doing in terms of fifth-generation network work with the FCC and also the Internet of Things. The Geek Squad in Congress seems to be active this summer.
They are active this summer. This seems to have been this is sort of a somewhat hot topic, believe it or not, at the political conventions where it's not all politicking. There is some policy discussions that go on. Actually, in the interest of full disclosure, I'll just say that my company actually sponsored a policy lunch in both Philadelphia and Cleveland, and a bunch of people showed up to talk about this, including several members of Congress. This seems to be sort of the new the tech story, probably not of this year, but probably of the next administration, is as more and more devices can talk to each other over the Internet or can at least be connected to the Internet. This is going to raise, you know, all kinds of policy issues, the spectrum, the bandwidth, the 5G that you mentioned, policy issues, privacy issues, access to the data by the government. It's going to be one of the big things. And if telecommunications and technology policy, the history repeats itself, Congress will be relatively behind the curve, even though they're sort of thinking about this. They'll be relatively behind the curve before they actually get anything done. So another old adage about Congress and technology policy is they usually make up their mind about how to regulate a new technology right as the market is moving on to something else. So that having been said, there are some geeky members. There are a few people who worked for high-tech firms before they got elected to Congress. There's the famous Daryl Issa, former chairman of the Government Reform Committee, who's got to be the richest man in Congress because he's got holds a lot of patents and a lot of ran some electronics businesses. So there are more. With each passing election, there are more people who are plugged into this stuff. And who knows, maybe they will figure out how, if at all, to regulate the Internet of Things or provide it with the bandwidth before it's too late.
Because there was a rare unanimous vote by the Federal Communications Commission, which has been one of the most divided agencies.
That's right. They are divided, but there are only five of them. And I think there are only five. It's a very small number, obviously. A much tinier number than in Congress, and they were able to agree to open up, I think it was 11 gigahertz worth of spectrum to allow for this burgeoning world in which we're now living, in which the Internet is being used to run all manner of healthcare devices, and not to mention home consumer devices.
Yeah, someday we'll have completely ubiquitous broadband wireless, and I wouldn't say that the so-called LTE that they run now is that way, but yes, 11 gigahertz were allocated in the 28, 37, 39, and 64 to 71 gigahertz bands for those that really follow this stuff in great detail. But they did vote unanimously to allow that spectrum for so-called fifth-generation services. So, yeah, small pieces of progress, but I guess if you're a geek, it's a big one.
I think that's right, and I think that's probably will be the last word on this from the government, at least until next year. You know, just to remind people, Congress comes back after Labor Day. They're only around for a month. Then they go away to campaign. Then they come back after the election, and that's really in all of their must-do work for the year, to be honest about it. All the must-do stuff for the year will get crammed in between Veterans Day and Christmas.
David Hawkins is senior editor at Roll Call. As always, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you, Tom.
You can read more and share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click share with friends.